Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic podcast with Winifred A. Winston and LaDerrick Horn, the show that unapologetically focuses on helping Black and underrepresented minorities navigate the special education process. We want to help raise awareness in the Black and Brown community, remove the stigma about learning disabilities, and provide you access to professionals in the space of dyslexia and special education that you need to hear from.
Hey, everybody, this is LaDerrick Horn here. I'm here with Winifred. Hey, Winifred.
Hey, LaDerrick.
So you're getting ready to hear an interview that Winifred did with O.T. Warren. O.T. Warren the third, that's right. And and we don't want to forget the third, because I think you'll hear as part of his story is not only being a person with dyslexia, is that he's also a part of a very proud family of entrepreneurs who are doing amazing things. And there were a few things in listening to this interview that stood out to me. Number one is that O.T. just felt like someone I grew up with, right? Like, I think it's one of the interesting things about the dyslexic experience and the experience of people who have passed through, you know, special education or some form of special education, is that many of us have very similar experiences. You know, it felt like if him and I were in a room together, we would just have to, you know, have a very brief conversation and we'd be real fast friends. The other thing is that he talks about mainstreaming and his experience being mainstreaming as a young person. And that was, again, familiar. And I would also say maybe a bit triggering for me, because I remember, you know, being classified in the third grade and having, you know, a special education teacher that was just a champion of mine, who was slowly trying to push me, you know, out into regular classes. But it was very much just sort of being dropped in to a classroom surrounded by people I didn't know and not having the supports that I really needed to be successful. And that mainstreaming, I think, is important because I am a champion of inclusion and inclusive practices and making sure that not only are all of us in the same room together, but we're also getting the supports we need to be successful. And that's both the students and the staff of the school. And so, yeah, just hearing him talk about that throughout his journey, you know, just brought that up to me and you know, it was something to listen to as you guys experience this conversation.
I just want to add, I mentioned very often in the podcast that he was one of the first people, Black people, that I met that like steered me in the right direction. And we talk about community, we talk about networking a lot on this podcast. And I met OT because he was referred to me by another Black woman who I met at work. I was doing work and I had to go visit a CBO, community-based organization. And me and this young lady were talking. And at the end of our meeting, we're wrapping up. And somehow, I don't know how, we got on the topic of my daughter being dyslexic and her nephew having some challenges, right? And so she just said to me, oh, well, you need to meet OT. I can make that connection, right? And so, you know, this is just another example of sharing, being okay to share and talk about these topics, right? These taboo topics to other people of color.
Yeah, and OT is a great example of just the confidence, right? The confidence of someone who has embraced the identity of being dyslexic, and you don't hear any shame in his voice, right? He's coming from a place of empowerment. And I hope that this conversation empowers you. So without any more to do, here is the interview that Winifred had with OT.
Today, we have O.T. Warren with us. O.T. is the president of O.T. Warren Management. I'm so excited to have him today. Welcome, O.T.
Thank you. Hello. Thank you very much. And I just want to thank you for, you know, inviting me to be on this podcast. And I was going to give thanks to you for being such an advocate for Black dyslexics.
Thank you, O.T. Thank you.
So again, I want to thank you for, you know, being so passionate about this subject and being a parent advocating for your child that's dyslexic. And, you know, I don't believe that you're dyslexic. So that really means a lot to, you know, to me, dyslexics, that you're jumping out there and you're really fighting for us. So, you know, thank you.
Thank you, OT. But enough about me. I want you to share with the audience your story. I find it amazing. And it was one of the first, again, you were like the first person I talked to who had a positive experience and your parent knew how to get you help. Everyone else I spoke to either didn't know what dyslexia was, hadn't heard of dyslexia. But when I talked to you,
You were like, no, this happened. My dad did this. So tell us about your journey.
Yeah, well, I got diagnosed with dyslexia when I was in the fifth grade at Roland Park Public School. And my father was really a big advocate for me because he was also dyslexic. So he knew that I needed additional help once it was identified. So from first to fifth grade at Roland Park, I didn't really struggle as much, but I was part of the Learning Resource Center at Roland Park. Like, I was mainstreamed into class, but I would always have a period where I would go to the Learning Resource Center. And, you know, that was always a fun class for me, you know, enjoyed the kids there, the friendships you made, special friends just being in the Learning Resource Center. And a teacher, I remember her name, her name was Miss Slow. She was really, really nice. I think about that now as I get older. I was like, wow, the Learning Resource teacher, her name was Miss Slow. I was like, now that I think about it, I was like, you know, wow. But, you know, for kids who learn a little bit differently, you know, I didn't think about that when I was young, but I think about that now. I was like, wow, that's kind of ironic. Of course, we're not slow. We just learn differently. But that was always something that I enjoyed, going to the Learning Resource Center. And after fifth grade, I was mainstreamed into the middle school. And that's when things kind of got a little bit tougher because I didn't have that Learning Resource Center to go into. Like, they just kind of just mainstreamed me. I was in sixth grade, and that's when, you know, I started struggling. I started getting like deficiencies in class, and my father knew that I needed some help. So that's when I got tested. A psychologist, I remember his name was Dr. Arterbein. I'm not sure if he's still around, but he tested me, and I tested for, you know, dyslexia. I remember the going testing and having to move around blocks, and I think my reasoning skills were very high. You know, I do remember that. He was like, how did you do that? How did you figure that out? I was just like, I don't know. It's like this game that you move around blocks and things like that. And they also did some reading comprehension with me. And that's when it was diagnosed that I was dyslexic. And so at that time, my father was trying to figure out, hey, what do I do? And, you know, I was struggling in class. I was not necessarily a bad kid, but I was getting deficiencies with everything checked off, like behavior wise and certain classes. And he was just trying to figure it out. And it was actually pretty depressing for him. I remember him telling me as I got older, and he wanted to get me into a school called Gemesee. And I was in the sixth grade. And I remember going to visit a school, and it was a little bit different. You know, Roland Park was kind of a mixed school. I had Black kids and white kids in my class, but, you know, Gemesee, it was mainly a majority white students. So during that time, you know, I was still at Roland Park, and I guess the hiccup was I couldn't get into Gemesee. You know, I tested well. Gemesee doesn't accept just any student. You have to have like a certain IQ score to get in. And I tested well, and my father had the money to get me in, but for some reason there was a block. They didn't let me in. So he was trying to figure it out, and he just really didn't know what to do until one day he was coming from a board meeting, and he saw someone in the elevator who was asking, hey, Otis, what's going on? You don't look well. And he was talking about, he's like, my son's not doing well in school. And, you know, she explained like, hey, what's the problem? And he said, I'm trying to get him into the school, and, you know, they're not letting him in. You know, he's tested well, and, you know, it's still, I don't understand. So the next day he got a call that your son can go to Gemesee.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I was immediately transferred. You know, it was kind of like a OT, you going to a new school. You know, I was leaving Roland Park, and I was just like, okay. I as a kid, I kind of, you know, I just adapted. You know, I didn't really fight it or anything like that. So ended up going to Gemesee. I was in sixth grade at the time, but they put me back a grade when I transferred in. And Gemesee, they don't go fifth grade, sixth grade, they go by letters. So I think at that time I was in Star Group. So I started in Star Group midway in, and it was, you know, it was different going to that school. You know, I was, again, I was the only Black kid in the school, and not in the school, but in my class. So I kind of had to adapt to that and adapt to the style, the learning style that they, I would have a tutor, mainly small classes. And one thing that I really remember that was different is we called the teachers by their first name.
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So I was like, wow, I can just call you by your first name. Like I had to get used to that. No, it was a good experience. You know, they kind of, I'm just trying to, you know, thinking back at it, you know, I was just kind of going through it as a, I guess I was 12 at the time. So mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think back to how they helped me with my learning difference. And it was, I think it's a lot with the smaller classroom sizes and basically just having, they paid a lot of attention to me individually. It was, you know, I had an individual tutor and it was a good experience. So
yeah, it's very different. My daughter is at Gemma, and she's going to Star Group because she's going to sixth grade.
Okay.
And what I learned as director of admissions of another private school is, when my daughter was identified, I immediately thought, oh, we have, okay. When I learned about private dyslexia schools, because I had never heard of them, I didn't even know they existed, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know Gemisi, Odyssey, the Lab School. These are schools here in Baltimore. I didn't even know they existed. And I passed the Lab School all the time driving to work, right? I knew about the Green Spring area from when I worked in sales, but I just never knew about these schools, right? Mm-hmm. And someone said, oh, you need to get her into a private dyslexia school. I'm like, they have those? Like, I didn't know. Right. And what I realized after being director of admissions of one of the schools is that I thought as a parent, okay, she has dyslexia, she's just going to get into this school. But because so many students are behind and a lot of parents don't get them identified until later, even the private schools have a hard time accepting kiddos because they group you by your academic level. So they're looking for a certain profile. For example, I was helping a parent and her daughter is about to enter high school, but she has been fighting the whole time and her daughter hasn't been remediated. Her math is like on an elementary level, like second, third grade. Mm-hmm. So she's having a hard time getting accepted to a school because there's no peer group for that. They're right. going to be at least at middle school math, right? If they're behind. Right. So I didn't know that. I just thought my daughter is dyslexic. She's going to get into this school, right? And that's not the case. They're looking for a certain profile. And then they have a number cap because they want to keep it small and they want to be able to have that individual help and really get to know the child. So it was all these other factors that I just didn't know about. Right. And like I tell folks, if you're doing tutoring, if you're doing outside tutoring, let the school know, because that can make all the difference. Right. I didn't know when my daughter toured the school. I thought, you know, I said, oh, she's touring to see if she likes it. Her dad was like, no, they're evaluating her. I'm like, what? He was like, they're seeing if she's going to be a good fit, what group she would match with, you know, and me and her dad toured two schools, but then she did what they call shadow days at two different schools. So there was a lot I didn't know about that process of how do you get in? I just figured she's dyslexic. It's a dyslexia school. She's going to get in. But see, one thing you pointed out was that your dad had a friend. He knew someone. You know, he knew someone and he shared that with them. Hey, I'm stressing out. My son is not doing well. We're trying to get him in this school. And culturally, we don't talk about these things, right? Like, we're not going to see someone out and they say, oh, you look stressed. What's going on? Oh, my child has a learning disability and I'm trying to get them in a school. But your dad did that. And I mean, we don't know who that friend was and like how influential they might have been. But the next day, he got a call and you got in, right?
Right. Yep,
so networking and talking and sharing and asking questions is so important, right? Yep. It's so important because this is a very small space, you know, just learning disabilities, learning differences, special education, it's a very small space and folks know people or they know resources that you just wouldn't find out about. So it's important that you talk about it, that you share information because you never know. I mean, you know, he just was getting off the elevator.
Right. Yep. So that is important to, you know, speak about that. And that's one thing I've always, I haven't been, you know, ashamed of my dyslexia or anything like that. So, you know, I kind of, I talk about it, like, you know, especially in classes and things like that, with teachers, I kind of let them know, like, hey, you know, I have dyslexia. And that's one thing, you know, some people are like, I have a friend, he doesn't tell anyone. Like he doesn't tell his friends, people he's in a relationship with, you know, it's like, hey, that's fine. It's, you know, we just learn different, and it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Did your friend go to public school or private school?
He went to public school, and then he went to a school for all dyslexics, a high school.
High school?
Yeah.
The reason why I asked that is because what I noticed is that when kiddos, two things, when they're in an environment and they're being taught, okay, you have dyslexia, it's okay, you learn differently, this is how you advocate for yourself, they're taught how to self-advocate, right? And they'll speak up about it. Right. And then if they have a parent, like your dad, he was like, okay, you just learned differently, I got to get you help. That makes a difference in how that adult will speak up about it. You know what I mean? Like having that support and being told like, it's okay. Right. And that makes a huge difference, because what I would tell parents is after K-12, you're on your own. Nobody's going to know. Nothing follows you forever. After K-12, nobody's going to know. And that child's still going to have some struggles and some things that they need more time, right? In college, you have to self-advocate. When you get out in the workplace, employers are legally to provide a reasonable accommodation. But if you don't even know and you don't speak up, then how can they help you?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So I just was asking that, because what I find is that the kiddos in public schools aren't being, and I remember when I was in school, kids were tracked. Right. They were tracked. And then you had those bottom in quotation marks. Right. Or on the other side of the building or something. Right. Yeah. So there was that negative connotation with being dumped in this class.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's just the educational system was not set up to teach us. It's like, you know, if you're a left-handed person and somebody's always teaching you how to use your right hand, that's not going to work, you know? So it's just like, we just learn differently. And once we learn the way that we need to learn, we got it. Like it's no stopping. So.
Yeah. So tell me about your college experience. What was next after you went to Gemesee for, what is it, middle and high school?
No, I actually went to Gemesee for just middle school. They didn't have a high school in the 90s.
Okay.
So after Gemesee, I went to Calvert Hall. So Calvert Hall had a program actually called the Xavier program. I think it's called something different now. I think it's called the LaSalle program now.
So
I went to Calvert Hall, and that was a great experience for me. I felt Gemesee prepared me well for Calvert Hall, and got through that. I played sports. I was on the football team, and it was a great experience. The Xavier program helped me, you know, again, that was like the learning resource center from my like first and fifth grade years. Like I had that one subject that I would go, one class I could go every day to the Xavier program and meet with my tutor. Her name was Miss Von Meigen. I remember her, and she was very nice. You know, she would help me with any, you know, if I had any struggles with any classwork, and then we would just work on some basic things. And one thing the Xavier program also helped me with, extended timing on test.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that, you know, I didn't really experience that at Gemesee, because you would get all the time, you know, you were in the class with all your peers, and when you finished, you finished. But, you know, for the Xavier program, you went there and you took your test in that facility.
So
you weren't mainstream taking your test with all your other peers. You went to a private area to take your test. So I feel like that was very helpful for me. And the one thing that after Calvert Hall, I remembered was we had multiple choice questions at Calvert Hall and small essay. But when I got into college, it was like essay questions. Like you don't get the multiple choice. You're just going to have this whole essay. You have a one question on a whole. And I was kind of like thrown off on that. I was like, what? I fill up this whole blue book with a answer. You know, that was the thing that I think, you know, Calvert Hall was great, but I wasn't prepared for that essay question, those long essay questions in college. So that's one thing I want, you know, parents and students to who are listening to this know, like, be prepared for that. Like when you go to college, you might have to have a longer answers for your essay question. It might not even be multiple choice.
Yeah. And that's key, because what Gymnasy did for you was they provided the intervention, right? You know, how are you going to improve your reading? How are you going to improve your comprehension, your writing, and and your math skills, right? They provide the intervention, right? And then when you went to Calvert Hall, they provided the accommodations. And what parents don't realize is that they're different. The intervention is the how.
Right.
How is it different? How are you going to differentiate this instruction for this kiddo? Because I remember when my daughter was identified, they was like, oh, we're going to give her more time. We're going to let her know that we're going to call on her first on the carpet. And I kept saying, but how is that teaching her how to read? Like, that's not teaching her how to read, because she reads differently. The way you're doing it is not working right now. And so the accommodations, and she needs both. Right. She's learning how to read, but she's a slow reader. So she's going to need that accommodation of more time. Right. And so it's very important that children get the interventions, you know, 1 through 8. They get the interventions. And back then, Gymnasy, because they didn't have a high school, they knew that we've got to get these kids ready. Right. We got to get them ready. We don't have a high school to keep nurturing and pouring into them. They need to be ready to transition to a traditional high school with supports. Right. And so that's really key. So then when you go to college, you get the accommodations and supports. And what I learned too, we had Dr. Butler on the show, and I didn't even think of this. I know that when you have a learning difference, you can go to support center at your college. But then a lot of the academic coaching or academic services, they're just as good and helpful as the support services. They're just another layer of support, like the writing center, different things like that. So it's just very important that parents understand that there's the intervention, the what's different to get them up to snuff, to close the gap. And then you can, you know, some kiddos do transition to a traditional high school that has supports, that has a program, or the parent is just more knowledgeable to really get a robust IEP or 504 plan for high school, because now they've got the intervention. So that's really, really key. So what was college like for you after you had the experience as far as accessing services and help you needed? Did you seek out help, or did you say, you know what, I got this?
Oh yeah, I want to go back just 1 second to the Gymnasy experience, and then I'll double back. But I wanted to let parents know, as far as in Gymnasy, I felt like they focused a lot on my reading and, you know, comprehension. But, you know, Gymnasy is a great school. I don't know if things changed, but I felt like my math was kind of left behind because they were focusing so much more on my reading. And I didn't get I felt like the math subjects were not really strong when I was there. And so I think I struggled with a little bit more of my mathematics when I got to Calvert Hall. You know, and I know that there's dyslexia, but there's also a dyslexic for math. Is it called, what's it called, dyscalculus or?
Yeah, dyscalculia. Yeah. And there's a lot of reading in math, right? And so those who struggle with dyslexia can struggle in math just overall. Right. And you have the dyscalculia, which is the learning disability in math. And then you have dysgraphia, which is the learning disability in written expression. And so there's like the three D's, dyslexia, dyscalculia, and dysgraphia. I can tell you that the math has really improved, and it is much more robust. And that was a topic at all of the schools, right? Uh-huh. All of the area schools, really increasing the math and the writing. Right. Because like you said, that essay question, and my daughter, she was at two dyslexia schools. So Gymnasy is our second dyslexia school. And definitely they focusing on all three. But of course, that reading is the primary focus. And what I learned, because I asked her math teacher, I said, well, how can I reinforce it and help her? Now, my daughter does not have a love of reading, but she enjoys cooking.
Okay.
But she enjoys sewing.
Okay.
Right. And sewing has a lot of math and cooking. She's got to read the recipes. That is the first time I really saw her, like, she goes to school and she's learning how to read, but to come home and say, oh, show me what you learned, read for me. No, that's not happening. My daughter looks at me sideways. I'm tired. I work really hard in school. But right. I overhear her in the kitchen trying to read the recipes, right? So she's reading the recipes and then she's doing the measurements, right? Mm-hmm. So her teacher was like, just push her in everyday experiences to use those skills. So she's using math and cooking. She's using math and sewing. Oh my gosh, is she not using math and sewing? Because she asked me questions and I'm like, wait till you go to sewing class. I can't help you. Right. But you know, she's using those skills and the things that she likes to do. And right. So I'm very conscious now of how can I help her, right? Mm-hmm. Like writing, it's not her favorite either. But if I say we're going grocery shopping, go ahead and write the list. And I'm not correcting her spelling. I'm not, you know, whatever. Go ahead and write the list for us. And she's like, okay, mommy, I'll write the list. So this is like reinforcing that writing.
Right.
So I'm trying to sneak it in. Right. I'm trying to sneak it in. But I know that they have really upped the math.
Okay.
And she had a wonderful math teacher last year and math tutor. And so this year she was like, oh no, mommy, I don't need a math tutor. And it was like, oh no, she's going to be fine over the summer. I'm like, go ahead with your bad self. But I remember when I was at the private school, and a part of being director of admissions, you talk with other schools and you guys always come together about certain things, and the math and the writing, because those were the key things so that kiddos could transition, but then also be successful and get in any college they wanted to go to, right? And not be pigeonholed or have to take remedial math and writing classes. So yeah.
So I just, you know, I did get tutoring at Calvert Hall for my math, you know, like private tutoring. I think I remember going to a tutor. She actually taught at Friends, and she, you know, would go to our house. She would teach me some tricks that were really helpful for like algebra and things like that. And it's like, wow, you know, but I do remember tutoring is very important. Individual tutoring, like if you're struggling, that's the one subject I feel like I struggled most in at Calvert Hall was, you know, my maths, but I did get tutoring and I was able to successfully pass the classes and sometimes, you know, do really well. So, you know, that's a good point. And at the end of Calvert Hall, I ended up graduating with honors at Calvert Hall after leaving Genesee. And I got the honors award for the Xavier program. They chose a student out of the senior class who did the best out of the Xavier program.
Wow. And
that student was me. So I kept it a secret from my father that year. And when he saw me come across the stage with honors, like he couldn't hold back. He's like, OT, the guy in the back of me, he was patting my back because he was crying.
So that was a
really good experience for me, you know, through Calvert Hall. And then, you know, you asked a question about college. I remember one time Miss Von Meigen, my Xavier teacher, she told me, she said, OT, my senior year, she told me, she said, OT, you know, college is going to be tough for you, but you're going to get through it because of your, you have great people skills. And at that time, I was like, what does that mean? I didn't know what that meant as a teenager. Like, I just heard her say, college is going to be tough for me. I was like, what? Like, but I do remember her saying at the end, she's like, you're going to do okay because you have good people skills. So you asked a question about college. I ended up going to Adelphi University after Calvert Hall. And I chose some colleges that were, that had a program similar to the Xavier program at Calvert Hall. Adelphi had something like that. You know, but once I got there, I saw like, okay, it wasn't as intense as Calvert Hall. You know, it was kind of just like a program. Hey, you need help or anything? You know, and if you said no, they didn't really dig into like, let me see what you need. You kind of like, you know, and as a teenager in college, you're like, no, I'm good. You know, so, but what it really helped me with, again, was the extended time on tests.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I needed that extended time when I tell y'all about those essays. I was just like, what is this? Like, I got to write a whole, like, fill up this book with an answer to this question. So that definitely helped me in college. And, you know, it was a smaller school, Adelphi University, those smaller classes. So that's one reason why I chose it. But one of the main reasons why I chose it was because it had a program which I thought was similar to the Xavier program. And they offered me extra time. But my second year at Adelphi, I got in a really bad car accident. I was pledging a fraternity. And my big brother at the time, he fell asleep at the wheel. And I had a severe head trauma. And that, you know, I was mid-semester, I was when that happened. And I had to go back to Baltimore. You know, the accident happened. I don't really even remember going back to Baltimore.
Oh, wow.
I woke up in my bed in Baltimore, kind of like, I remember waking up and said, what happened? I went to my parents' room and they were like, you were in a car accident. And I was just like, wow. And, you know, when you have a head trauma, you kind of, it's either one way. I'm pretty much a relaxed guy. And, but you know, I was absolutely my opposite self with a head trauma. But once I got to, the swelling went down, I came to, and I was just thinking about like, well, what am I going to do with college? I was like, what am I going to do? Like I was mid-semester and they were like, my parents were kind of just like looking at each other like, okay, is he back? You know, I think he's back now. So I ended up losing that semester my sophomore year. So my parents asked me to make a decision if I wanted to go back. And I really couldn't make the decision at that age. I was just like, I didn't know what to do. And so I kind of let them make the decision for me. And they were like, okay, well, you're staying here. You're staying in Maryland. You know, Adelphi was in Long Island, New York. So I ended up transferring to a few colleges. I was a little confused, didn't know what I wanted to do after that. You know, so I decided to try. I was talking to my stepmother, who happens to be a psychiatrist. And she was like, she kind of sat me down on the couch at home. And it was like, she's like, oh, T, well, you know, you're good with people. Maybe you might want to try, you know, physical therapy, something like that. And, you know, so I kind of ran with that. And I went to, I started off at UB. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I didn't really like that school because it was mainly for like working adults.
Yep.
You know, at that time, it's different now. So, I went there and I just didn't like the atmosphere and I transferred out of there and I went to UMBC to try to do this physical therapy thing. Then I got into those biology classes and I was like, oh no, this is not going to work for me. I was like, so I had all these, you know, I had a pretty substantial amount of business credits and I actually talked to Mr. Harbowski, who still is the president of UMBC, and he kind of looked up my transcript and said, man, you got a lot of business credits. Like, we don't really have a business school, so you might want to, you know, look at some schools that you can use these credits. And so I did that, and I ended up transferring to Towson.
Go Tiger!
Ended up transferring to Towson, and I had a good counselor it was a counselor that helped you, like, kind of figure out what classes you needed to take.
Maybe like an academic advisor.
That's what it is. Yep, academic advisor. And she really helped me like figure it out. You know, I really appreciate her. I remember her. She was really passionate about her job. So if students want to find an advisor like that, like seek them out because they really are helpful. And she kind of like told me some teachers, hey, you need this class, you need that class. You know, you might want to stay away from this teacher. You know, she knew it all. So, you know, I ended up finishing at Towson with a business administration degree. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what I found out was that every college has to help a student that has a learning disability. Like they have to have some sort of center that you go to for your extended time, you know, and that's really, after a while, that's really all that I needed. But, going back to Jimsy, one thing that they did, they taught me to be an advocate for myself. And I had to, through that, that's when the advocacy started, was mainly in college. You know, I kind of had to get to know them. I made sure the teachers knew who I was and kind of knew my struggles. And they work with me, just like Ms. Von Meigen was telling me, like, I guess those were the people skills that she was telling me, like, hey, you're going to be okay because you have that. And I was able to, you know, some teachers would help me out. And after I explained to them, like, you know, some of my struggles. And then, you know, I do remember one teacher who, you know, you do come across those teachers that are not going to be as supportive. I think I was in my senior year and I was taking this decision science class and I was struggling. And I went to talk to the teacher, and the teacher, I guess he saw I was struggling. He was like, are you sure you want this to be your major? I was like, this is my last semester. Like, what do you, you know, like, yes, you know, like, I mean, that really kind of upset me. So I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna figure this out. I'm gonna show him. And so I kind of, I saw some other students that were struggling and I got them together. I said, let's study together. And I actually found, I went to another college. I went to UB. I went back to UB because I knew they had a good tutoring program. And I found a tutor at a different college to help me with decision science.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So again, that's another thing of like advocating for yourself. You know, I left Towson. I said, you know what, I'm gonna go to UB, see if they got have some tutors there that can help me with this class. And they did. And that was very helpful. And I got through the class. I think I got a C in that class, but I remember one time somebody saying like a C will see you through. So it saw me through. And you know, college, like Ms. Von Mike said, it was a struggle for me, but you know, I got through it and was able to finish.
That is awesome. That is an awesome story. I graduated, I got my graduate degree from Towson. I was actually telling someone, so every college that receives federal dollars, they have to, you know, provide services. And it's just a matter of what type and how robust those services are. So there are like three levels to services you can get at college. One where you would sign an agreement because you would be in the program. And then the next level would be less comprehensive, but they would have someone who's certified or who understands learning disabilities. And then that third level is almost like the bare minimum. Like the government says, we have to provide reasonable accommodations. You come in here, we're going to give you the bare minimum, right? So there's different levels to it. But I remember being at Towson and having a project, and it was three of us on the team. And at the last hour, these two kids said, oh, well, I have a learning disability. I can't write. Like they couldn't write. And I was going on vacation. I think I was going to Vegas. So I remember being on a plane, right in their section, in my section. I'm like, this is a setup. how both of them talk about they have a learning disability. This is a setup. But then, you know, the part that made me upset was it didn't seem like they even read over what I wrote when we had to present. That annoyed me more than anything. Right. Like, come on, y'all didn't even look over it. And now in hindsight, thinking about it, y'all gonna leave it up to the ADHD girl who have anxiety around deadlines, right? Have no concept of time and who's always late on things, you know, but I do remember that. But the key thing that you said here was self-advocacy. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want people to really hear and understand, that self-advocacy, because at college and beyond, you have to advocate for yourself and you've got to kind of navigate and figure out, like you went to UB, you're like, you know what? I didn't really like that school, but they had some things there that were on the up and up. Let me go back and find me a tutor.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So now you are the president of OT Warren Management, which is a Black owned business, right, and you are running things.
Yep. It's Otis Warren Management. It's a third generation business. My grandfather started the business. My grandfather was basically a landlord in Baltimore and provided housing for people on the west side of Baltimore. And after my grandfather was losing his sight, my father came in to help him and he really expanded the business and became a real estate broker, a property management company, and a developer. So now I'm in that third generation, keeping the business going. We're a successful management company, and I'm proud to say that we're one of the top rated management companies based on our size in the country. I'm not sure if anybody's familiar with apartment ratings, but a community that I manage, Dickey Hill Forest Apartment, is one of the top rated communities in Baltimore City. I'm a licensed real estate broker and I'm also a certified property manager.
Oh, so the learning never stopped, right? The test taking never stopped.
Yep. And the tutoring never stopped. Sometimes you find for my certified property management course, I had a great tutor, a gentleman that I told him I think it was at a conference. I said, hey, man, I want to get my CPM. And, you know, I told him straight. I was like, look, man, I'm dyslexic and I might struggle with some of these classes. And he gave me his information. He said, call me when you're ready. And he was able to get a group of us together, and he kind of like met with us on Zoom and everything. And he really helped show us some tricks on how to navigate through that CPM exam. So it's always about advocacy. And I think, you know, honestly, I think he told me he had a son that went to Genesee.
So oh, I think
that it struck him like, hey, that's why I was like upfront that he's like, you know what, just call me. And he was able to help me out and give me some really good tips on that exam. So yeah, it really never stops advocating for yourself and just trying to find those things that work for you.
Oh my gosh, OT, that is so awesome. Well, there you have it. I really wanted OT to just share his journey, you know, share his story from, you know, the beginning to where he is now, because like I said, he was one of the first people that I spoke with that pointed me in the right direction to get help for my daughter. And I can't thank him enough and appreciate it. But what I really want you guys to hear and what resonated throughout his story was self-advocacy and was talking to people and speaking up. His dad did it on the elevator with the young lady. You know, OT did it in high school when he was in the program and then in college. And now out here, he's the president of a very successful Black-owned business. And he wasn't shy about saying, look, I want to take this exam, but hey, you know, I'm struggling. And the guy, I'm like, wait a minute. And there's that familiarity. The guy is like, wait a minute. I know about Genesee. I know about dyslexia because my kiddo has it, right? So we've got to be able to talk and be comfortable sharing information, because there's nothing wrong with learning different. And that's just really what I want to drive home. There's nothing wrong with learning different. Your kid learns different. You learn different. So what? Right? So what? I mean, you're still great. So, you know, guys, I just really wanted to drive that home. Self-advocacy, networking, talking, sharing your story.
Tune in next week, where we'll continue to bring you lived experiences and more unfiltered conversations with experts in the field around all things Black and dyslexic. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Black and Dyslexic podcast, where we educate, empower, and equip Black and underrepresented minorities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is partially funded by Morgan Cares and the Center for Urban Health Disparities Research and Innovation, awarded by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is sponsored by Dyslexia Advocation Incorporated, a 501c3 charitable organization located in Baltimore City, Maryland, whose mission is to equip parents of children with dyslexia and other language-based learning disabilities with the necessary tools to help their children become successful readers. You can find them on the web at www.soallcanread.org.